Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Hello, my media masochists. Welcome to the first of our holiday episodes of The Worst Show on Earth, a podcast where my friends and I watch the worst that the television medium has to offer in an effort to determine what is the worst show on Earth. I'm Matt Murphy, and I am very much looking forward to being boiled in my own pudding. I bet it does a wonderful job clogging your pores. I was told by a ghost of an old business partner that I would be haunted by three spirits this night. And, oh God, they're here now! She's the ghost of confectionery sugar, Rachel Bieber.
Hello, Matthew Murphy.
Oh no, are you...
I'm here to make sure you eat enough pie.
That won't be a problem. She's the ghost of atheists putting up Christmas trees anyway. It's Alex Humphrey.
Merry holiday time. It's me, Alex. I'm haunting you, I guess.
You're doing a great job, honey.
Aw, thanks.
He's the ghost in the machine. It's Tachi, the human IMDb.
You think these are bells, but these are my chains! Chains!
And by some holiday miracle, we are graced with a guest. You may recognize his bass baritone from the Scabby Rooster Twitch channel, where he plays in the Demi Dozen with Tachi, Alex, and myself. It's Carrie Kingdom.
If I'm the last ghost, am I allowed to talk?
Yeah.
No, this is going to be a really dumb podcast.
You're
going
to have to describe me ominously pointing at things.
And looming. Don't forget the looming.
You really didn't think this through, Matt Murphy.
I didn't.
You know what? This movie could get a Christmas Carol right, so I feel like we don't have to either.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yes, this fortnight, we subjected ourselves to a Carol Christmas.
Do you know what a fortnight means?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
It's a video game that kids play, actually.
I'm sorry, I'm using old-timey words because we're talking...
Inappropriately.
Oh, fine. Anyway, this second week, we subjected ourselves to A Carol Christmas, which is a Hallmark Channel retelling of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
Oh, I just got it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Really?
It came out in 2003, only this time Scrooge is a lady. Ooh. Played by Tori Spelling.
Played generously, using that word here.
Tachi, why is Tori Spelling famous?
Because of her dad uncle, who was Aaron again.
Aaron Spelling?
Aaron Spelling. Who was he in relation to her again?
Oh,
I think it's her dad.
Okay, that makes sense. So he put her on 90210, right?
She was in Beverly Hills 90210.
And that's what I know about Tori Spelling. Human IMDb has done great detail to delete parts of the algorithm.
Ah, I see. I believe she is also... Isn't she also in Sharknado?
No, Tara Reid.
Oh.
Get your blonde women right.
Sorry, they just all look the same to me.
Whoa.
But before we get into our schlocky selection, I'd like to ask about our experiences with A Christmas Carol. Does anyone have a favorite rendition, and why is it the one with the Muppets?
Yeah, like, for me at least, like, there's a lot of good versions of it. Like, I always grew up watching, like, because my dad used to love, like, watching the Albert Finney Scrooge musical. But, like, looking back, like, even if you take away all the Muppets from Muppet Christmas Carol and just have, like, Michael Caine's performance, even if it was in, like, an otherwise, like, totally done straight Christmas Carol, he might still be, like, just enough to make it excellent. Like, he was that good. And then plus Muppets, plus music. It was just really great.
What about Bill Murray?
Bill Murray's pretty great.
That's the Christmas Carol that I've seen once.
How many Christmas carols have you seen, Rachel?
I mean, there's that one with Bill Murray.
Right.
And then, like, the Muppet one, I think I've seen it.
I
let me refresh you. So There's a guy named Scrooge. Uh-huh, he's visited by Marley, who's a Muppet.
Oh, whoa.
He's two Muppets.
Two Muppets.
He's two Muppets. He's two Muppets. Right? He's,
are they standing one on top of another?
Waldorf and
Statler and Waldorf.
Oh, Statler and Waldorf.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay,
my names
okay.
are falling apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know those guys.
Does this ring a bell?
No.
Yeah, now
boo.
It does. Now it does.
Boo.
Oh, my God.
Boo, boo.
All right, now, to be fair to Rachel, let's all quickly go through our favorites Hanukkah movies.
Rachel is...
A White Christmas. That's my favorite Hanukkah movie.
Rachel, I feel compelled to point out, is the only Jew on the podcast and therefore has a very different perspective between the three of us who I think were raised Catholic and then the one of us that was raised atheist.
I was Protestant adjacent.
Protestant adjacent.
I stared through windows at their strange rituals.
Mm.
I was raised Catholic in the sense that I was raised a basketball fan. They brought me to the games and I thought about Spider-Man the whole time.
What a perfect description.
Man, Christianity is so confusing.
When Spider-Man fought Carnage, we knew
at Damascus.
At Damascus, we knew that good would always triumph over evil.
I went to
evil
a passion
this case
play once.
Represented by Dormammu,
the dread Dormammu. Well, yes. All right. Well, let's just get right into it. I mean, I also think The Muppet Christmas Carol is the best Christmas Carol.
Oh yeah, we're all agreed.
I think.
Yeah.
Though the Albert Finney one is also very, very good.
Yeah, the music in that is wonderful.
What about the Bill Murray one?
Also wonderful.
Thank you.
It actually has a lot to do... The Scrooged has a lot to do with A Carol Christmas. Because it's very similar in that
they're all very similar. They're all the Christmas Carol.
Okay. So here's the thing about A Christmas Carol. It is a novella that is written in modern movie three-act structure.
Mm.
It is the easiest thing to adapt... Because it is exactly beat by beat the sort of structure that you see in every movie.
Right.
In that way, I can see that Charles Dickens is an important writer. I just hate everything that he's written.
Really?
Yeah.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, though. We're going to need to explain what A Christmas Carol is about to all our listeners.
Really? You think they don't know?
Well, let's not make assumptions.
Okay. If I know, they know.
So let's talk about what makes this A Carol Christmas so special.
William Shatner.
Gary Coleman.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Stagehand number three.
Our three favorite performances of the movie.
Yes, they were the best actors in the movie. We were told that Tori Spelling was going to be horrendous to watch. But she really, someone mentioned not even in the bottom three actors of the show.
And I don't want to like dump on it, but she did like really, she was very believable in the first half as like evil Scrooge.
Yeah.
Like just being like snide and mean and rude. Like she played that very well. The problem was at the end when she was supposed to be nice, reformed Scrooge. And like, Alex, I think you said perfectly, she comes across as Stepford.
Oh yeah, she has had a stroke.
Yeah, she's clearly had a stroke and something has gone poorly for her.
But we are, in fact, getting ahead of ourselves. We should explain what the setup is of A Carol Christmas. So Carol Cartman is Tori Spelling, and she has a daytime talk show where she's a horrendous bitch to absolutely everyone for no good reason at all. Because
she's not even about money in this.
She's money focused, but not like in the penny pinching way that Scrooge is famous for.
Yeah, they very much downplayed the whole rich miser and more focused on the wants attention, wants fame.
Mm.
Although she did, you know, only want to give soap to everybody on her crew for Christmas and not spend more than $20 on each gift for her niece and nephew.
Yes.
And they want to give toys to children on her show, and she refuses to let a single toy be given to them on screen.
Yes.
Because she hates toys.
And children.
She seems to just hate in general. Like, there's no real focus of her hate. She just, she's just a horrible person.
She does have a Captain Planet villain vibe.
Yes.
Like, she's just evil because she's evil, and therefore she evils.
Yeah.
So she robs foster children of their Merry Christmas.
There were a lot of things very confusing for me in this tale of Christmas. Like, who goes shopping on Christmas Eve?
Oh, are we talking about the tiny details of this movie? Because all the small details of this movie were dumb. Who buys a tree on Christmas Eve? Who goes shopping on Christmas Eve? Why does the ghost of Christmas present only show her stuff in the future?
That's that Christmas.
It's the present Christmas.
The present Christmas.
That happens.
And also, we should expand our dramatis personae, because we have to explain that not every single person is a perfect parallel to the classic Dickensian Christmas carol.
There is not a single cripple, except for the fat Santa.
Who she doesn't want to put on her show, and so you're like, wait, is she not, like, utterly awful? So, isn't she supposed to be utterly awful?
So, Carol has a personal assistant named Roberta. And Roberta is eventually revealed to be the Bob Cratchit analog. She's a single mom of a 10-year-old girl with no physical handicaps or mental handicaps whatsoever. And
for those who don't know A Christmas Carol that well, Tiny Tim's whole thing is that he is crippled and the family really could use money. So when we had Lily here, I know this sounds weird, but we were all kind of rooting for this kid to be more disabled. In any other circumstance, none of us root for children to be more disabled. Just when we're watching an adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
They could have even given her a limp. Just like the lowest effort disability.
No, the disability was that they were poor and they lived in a one-bedroom, like, crack house where sirens were playing.
But here's the thing. What's interesting about this movie is it depicts nothing but, like, Stepford suburbia. Like, they walk through, like, this nice, like, suburban area, and they're just like, oh, is someone dealing drugs here?
They
show the houses, and they're just, like, super nice.
It's like Van Nuys.
It's just Van Nuys.
It's just Van Nuys.
Oh, I thought the better one was when they go, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but they show the first house, and at least, like, externally, the house is falling apart a bit. Then they go to the second house, where Carol's sister and her husband live.
With their two children.
Gorgeous, huge house.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, look at them living in poverty. And the ghost of Christmas present is like, you know what? They're poor, but they're happy. He doesn't even correct her. He's like, this is like a $3 million house.
Yeah, they live in a very nice house.
It's clearly set in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
This movie.
And he gives the line, well, they may not be millionaires. It's like, yes, they are. They literally are if this is Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're renting that house.
Maybe it was Santa Clarita.
I think the shopping area was.
Definitely Santa Clarita.
Well, I would like to set up Hal and Marla, because
they're pretty important.
They're pretty important, and they're going to be the stars of many of our flashbacks. Hal is...
Executive producer,
and he wants the show to be more trashy. He wants... like the fat Santa, and we got to make fun of him. He wants the show to be more like a Jerry Springer thing, which I think this movie took place in 2003. That was probably a little more topical. And then instead of Jacob Marley, we have Aunt Marla. And you know how in A Christmas Carol, we do the Ghost of Christmas Past takes Scrooge into the past to show the error of his ways, to show these are some mistakes you've made, these are the opportunities you did not take. Here in A Carol Christmas, these flashbacks are more about, look how shitty Marla and Hal are.
And how easily manipulated you were, girl. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
She is kind of a bystander in her movie. Like, she doesn't...
It's none of it is her fault. She was misled.
So her... Carol's philosophy is that you got to make people wait for you so that they respect you.
That's Marla's philosophy.
But she got that from Marla. Mm-hmm. Which... and she has a picture of her dear departed Aunt Marla in her dressing room. And...
And also, like... Again, like what Alex said, like, they took the... schematic of A Christmas Carol, and whenever they had to improvise a detail, they screwed up and wandered wildly away from it. So, like, her miserly cruelty, her cruelty of, like, the equivalent of leaving Bob Cratchit freezing to death is, oh, I make my crew wait outside in the sun on a nice day, getting overtime.
So, Aunt Marla eventually shows up.
Oh, her scene, her chains. Her chains.
Her chains. Her chains.
We must warn you, listeners, the dark fate that this spirit endures.
She wears slightly too much gold chain. And I don't mean like rapper style heavy gold chain. Like,
no, it's fairly fashionable, but ugly.
Yeah, it's gaudy, it's tacky. If they had gone full bore on that, that would have been interesting. If she was weighed down by like this tacky, false, gaudy gold, I mean, that would have been interesting.
She was dressed in peak 80s.
I like to think that her curse, her suffering was that she would spend the rest of eternity not being fashionable. And that to the Hallmark Channel viewer, this is truly terrifying.
My dress is from Designing Women, and that show's been over for decades.
Pretty oh much, my yeah. God, no.
Yeah, that's pretty much how she was dressed.
And the actress was from Designing Women, right? Is that what she said during the...
No, recording? I can't remember what show she was in.
Her name was Dinah something. I can't recall. Oy.
I don't know.
Anyway, so...
That's Marla.
She was a star in a sitcom.
Yes. So Aunt Marla warns our dear Carol, Lovey is what she calls her. She warns Lovey Carol that she's going to be visited by three spirits.
At 12!
At 12, 12, 12.
Oh, do you remember what Carol does?
She unplugs the digital clock.
But she isn't visited by spirits at 12, though, because she goes and takes a nap at, like, four. One. Or one. Is it one?
It's one.
So all of her dreams are she's dreaming of the future. So it's not even night yet. So they don't even get that part of A Christmas Carol right.
Well, she had to nap before her live television show on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Also, before we leave Aunt Marla, can I just say, like, Dickens explicitly writes, like, nothing you read in this story will impress you if you don't understand that Marley was dead. And, like, it's... And he even says that, like, if you don't appreciate, like, the ghost and the scariness of Marley, like, nothing's gonna work in this story. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, this scene had no, like, change in tone from when, like, she was talking to PAs. Like, they played, like, slightly different music, but, like, the cinematography changed not a bit, the acting changed not a bit. She's wearing some, like, slightly pale makeup and some dark eyeshadow, and like
they didn't
it.
Even change the color temperature of the shot.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, they did she nothing. Wakes up. Carol wakes up and she's like, "Is there smoke? Is there a fire? Why didn't anybody wake me?" And we see like a wisp of smoke. I saw a wisp of smoke like out of the corner of the screen. I was like, "Oh, it's all going to be filled with fog." No, she opens the door to her dressing room, and it's just that there's nobody there. There's no fog.
I think it was supposed to be coming from her hot tea that Roberta got her.
I was
going to
say, I thought it was steam from her tea and that was it.
Yeah. There is the ghost. I do.
The ghost tells her, I'm sorry that I taught you to be a bitch, but she doesn't say that. What does she say? It rhymes with...
Rich.
Rich. I'm sorry that I taught Racy, you to be a rhymes with rich.
Racy. So I feel like we've gotten through the first part of the movie, which barely needs to be recapped.
Yes.
Carol is awful to everyone for no reason. She threatens to fire a stagehand because he bumps into her once.
Twice.
She's the worst possible person to her assistant. She won't give children presents because she hates children too much on her talk show where they've announced that she's going to give presents. So she's also like a PR disaster.
Yes.
She insults housewives, which I'm sure was thrown in there for the emotional effect of the viewer, perhaps.
But fat Santas are a bridge too far.
So I also want to highlight Tori Spelling's magnificent acting, physical acting skills, where she does such wonderful things as angry walking from the couch in her dressing room to her desk.
Oh,
stomp, 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 stomp.
Here's one thing you can say about Tori. She hits her marks. She starts at one mark.
You can see her hitting her marks.
She proceeds to the next mark. She stops firmly, waits about a half second, then turns to camera.
I also loved how she was reading the newspaper that clearly had the script in it. And was just like reading about her, like, oh, yes, her ex-beau, James Joyce?
John Joyce.
Sorry. James Joyce is a famous ghost. So
with an Irish bro.
Yes. So her beau John Joyce, who apparently just opens up homeless shelters for a living.
This was such a weird movie.
Why was he
even at her rehearsal when she was a teenager?
We're getting to that.
So after Marla leaves.
So the first ghost then is Gary Coleman as Little Pete, the ghost of Christmas Past.
Definitely not playing himself.
No. He was playing, you know, Little Pete from the show Little Pete.
Yeah, he was a child actor and now he's a ghost of Christmas Past.
It wasn't clear if the actor had died or if he was just taking the form of Little Pete, but it was clearly adult Gary Coleman.
You have to read the Extended Universe novels to understand the metaphysics of A Carol Christmas.
Oh, God.
As I recall, this is the ghost who has, like, the message he gives her, I think is kind of wrong. Because he takes her into the past and he shows her, like, scenes, like, her aunt's there and it's, like, her school play and she's doing a nativity scene. And Aunt Marla comes in, sees that she's not the Virgin Mary and that she's holding the myrrh, not the gold. And that really peeves her. Plus, an aside here, why does the box actually contain myrrh? Does the other box really contain gold? Also, why? What school is this? How can they afford that?
Myrrh is expensive.
All of that's expensive.
It is very expensive.
So she, like,
what
goes
was the
up...
third gift?
Frankincense.
Oh, right. Frankincense, myrrh, and gold.
Yeah. It's in the expanded universe of the Torah.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
I think, Rachel, you've called it fanfic.
I probably have, yes.
Also, side note, her teacher's name
is Granny.
Granny Gretschwalk.
Granny Gretschwald?
Gretschwalk.
Gretschwalk.
Not Mrs. Gretschwalk, like you would refer to a teacher,
right,
but it's Granny.
Granny
Gretschwalk.
Which I'm guessing is supposed to be the Fezziwig? Like, the closest thing there is to a Fezziwig.
Sure.
Which is a very important character in Ebenezer Scrooge's backstory in A Christmas Carol, who is the kindly boss in his first employment opportunity.
Yeah. No, I think that was supposed to be her beau. I think that's the role he played, wasn't it?
No, because Scrooge doesn't fuck Fezziwig.
Listen.
There's a lot of poetic license taken here.
Also, they couldn't have had sex. They weren't married yet.
Also, this is a Hallmark movie, so clearly they didn't have sex.
Those are all fair points. So yes, Gary Coleman takes her to her school play, then to a community theater play,
yeah,
where she is, where Aunt Marla's grand strategy is revealed, where she's sort of like the manager of Carol, and she's having her get big roles in small theaters.
And he also keeps pointing out that she's really underestimated or underrated her parents. Her parents, who we never see in this movie, clearly gave her so much freedom, letting her spend all this time with Aunt Marla, and she should really respect her parents for neglecting her. Like,
yeah,
that.
I wanted to get to that because that was the part where I'm like, no, Ghost of Christmas Past, that's bad parenting. Because she's like, my parents abandoned me and never came to my plays because they were always working. What the hell? And he's like, maybe they were caring for you.
They were providing.
Maybe
they were providing.
That
maybe
was
they
a
were
message
giving you
to
freedom.
Her own children.
She doesn't have children.
She hates
no,
children.
No, I mean real life Tori Spelling.
Whoa. Shit.
I'm not versed in the Spelling family, in case you all haven't noticed.
She has kids.
Okay.
Ah, okay. I don't know. I feel like that would be pretty cryptic. Also, would they really watch this?
I don't know that they would.
So it's at the community theater where Tori Spelling is introduced to character John Joyce, her romantic interest for the rest of the film,
who seems to have nothing to do with the play and only deals with homeless shelters.
Yes.
So what is he doing there?
They said that he was there to pick up old costumes that they were donating to a homeless shelter because homeless people need to look even more like freaks.
Also, What theater company has enough money to throw around that they can donate their old costumes rather than reuse them next year?
Well, this was a small community theater, so they're rolling in dough.
Okay, maybe this explains why they never show any homeless people at any of the shots in a homeless shelter in this movie. Because in this town, they've all been given clothes by theater companies, and they're dressed as Hamlet and Richard III. Falstaff
and Rustin
and the entire cast of Oklahoma.
why are all the homeless people dressed like cats?
Oh, community theater.
Well, we get a romantic montage.
Yes. Oh my god,
a sickening, creakly.
Yeah,
super disgusting romantic montage.
Which culminates in what should have been a proposal of marriage.
Sorry, did Ghost Gary Coleman project a montage in front of her?
Yeah, because the rest of it was kind of real time. Well, how was that? There was like a montage. That was the only montage. Though. Everything else occurred basically as it occurred.
Hmm. Okay, now my brain hurts. What were you saying, Rachel? It culminates in an attempted proposal.
In an attempted proposal, but she gets a page. Who has a pager in 2000? Oh, I guess it was the 90s. It was a flashback to the 90s.
Remember.
So she had a pager. And the pager...
Was it
on Marla?
Oh, it was that she had to go to her...
Rehearsal?
No, the show was going to go on. And he wanted to propose to her right before her show. Because that's not selfish. To give somebody who clearly needs to be in the space for a show to do something so emotionally, either wonderful or horrible, depending on your point of view, right before a show where you have to be in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there was some
really...
That
is so selfish.
There was some really, really toxic relationship stuff mm-hmm. in her, like, perfect relationship she missed out on,
mm-hmm.
where he was, like, constantly trying to propose to her at bad times. And kind of knew what was best for her. In like this like...
Marla
like,
doesn't know what's best for you. I know what's best for you. And that's my dick.
So during this montage, this is important. She has like this montage where she helps him at like soup kitchens. And they learn to skateboard. And they have Panda Express on a lawn in some park.
Wasn't that the picnic where he was going to propose?
Yes.
Yeah, but they have a picnic basket and Panda Express. Because product placement.
Yes.
Like, this was where I'm like, but this isn't how Christmas Carol works. Scrooge is an asshole. She's not supposed to be a good person.
Yeah, like, it's never her choice to be evil. Also, she at the end of this montage, like, finds out she got a job that she really wants. And, like, this guy, instead of being at all happy for her... is just disappointed and sad. And like it plays sad music, like this thing that she's worked for and achieved.
It was that agents saw her show and were interested in her.
Yeah.
Now, Aunt Marla was wrong to want to pull her away from the cast party. That was her constant mantra was, there will always be another party. And clearly if you're always taken away from the party, then there is no party. But... that he didn't want her to be successful in her career, that's so Hallmark.
She ruined his moments of proposing next to craft services.
Yeah.
Yeah, she ruined his moment. She's a bad person for that.
Uh-huh.
And also, like, if you're doing community theater and you find out you get, like, a big Hollywood job...
Oh, yeah, you go.
Pull me the fuck away from the party.
Well, yeah, but she also pulled her away from the party for the cast party for... the Christmas show.
Years ago. She can't pull her away from every party, right? Like, that's kind of insane. She does theater. There's a lot of parties in theater.
Yeah.
So, this meeting with the agents leads to her getting a job on a big television show called, like, Tilly in Beverly Hills. Tilly's of Bel Air. And this is, we know from previous statements that she's made, that this was her big break, and this is where she comes into the cultural consciousness.
Could that be like 90210?
Perhaps.
Not even a plural.
No.
Just one perhap.
And this is where we see John Joyce make his last stand. He's, I guess, been trying to propose to her continuously for months at this point.
I'm beginning to think he's just not good at proposing.
And he's trying to go.
That's not cold feet. That's ice socks.
He walks onto the set, and apparently everyone knows him. He's like, "Hey, John, how's it going?"
And he's super friendly to everybody.
He's super friendly. Knocks on Carol's trailer.
Now Carol's making everyone wait because you got to keep them waiting. That way they respect you.
That makes no sense.
Where he's seduced by Aunt Marla. I mean, accosted by Aunt Marla, who juts out her pantyhose leg in a very suggestive manner. She looked good in it. I mean, let's not mince words here.
Did she
thought she did. But
like, the scene, Murphy will be visited by three horny ghosts.
Ooh. But the movie didn't understand, like, what it was trying to do there. Like, and maybe it was just the two actors, because the scene was not delivered as well as
Rizzo the Rat and Gonzo.
Well, Rizzo the Rat and Gonzo have chemistry. I would say that nobody in this entire film had chemistry with anyone else in this entire film.
Yeah, everyone in this film was kind of like lead.
William Shatner had chemistry with himself.
Okay, but he's William Shatner.
Shatner, I thought, was great, which I think leads us into the arrival of Dr. Bob.
We're almost there.
Wait a minute, though, because I really need to dwell on this scene, because this is the scene where Carol has her Anakin Skywalker moment, where she becomes Darth Vader. Because up to this point, she's been fine. She's been a fine person. She's been, like, kind of pulled around by her aunt, and she, like, doesn't know. And then, you know, her boyfriend comes in. He's like, "Hey, everyone's waiting for you out there." And she's like, "I have killed the little ones." She's like, "I've gone full evil now. I'm just an awful person."
The word you're looking for is younglings.
Younglings. Thank you.
Younglings is a very important word. Yes.
Did I black out? What are you talking about?
She just goes full evil in the scene. Oh, yeah, like, okay. There's no gradual.
Right. Aunt Marla has taken complete hold of her psyche.
Right.
And she basically is just like, "Screw the homeless. I don't want them anymore. I don't... whatever."
She had a red lightsaber. You saw that part,
no,
right, Rachel?
No, I did not see that
part. You blacked out.
I definitely blacked out.
She force-chokes him.
Nope, that did not happen.
At the end of it all... John Joyce breaks up with her.
Aunt Marla. She's not the person he loves anymore.
Aunt Marla congratulates him on making it this long.
Aunt Marla has told him. She's been like, "Yo, I hate you, and I'm gonna poison you. You're small beans, and you're worth." And you'd think he would go to her and be like, "You know, your aunt really hates me.
Yeah,
she's really awful to me."
But that would mean communication between the sexes, and I don't think that's what Hallmark movies are about.
So I do want to point out one small detail that I thought was amazing, which was that while this scene in the trailer is playing out, Carol and Gary Coleman are like looking in through a window.
Oh yeah,
right.
But Gary Coleman suddenly just starts rising?
So for our viewers who may not know, Gary Coleman is extremely short.
He has some sort of endocrine disorder.
Had.
Yes, he has passed on. Yes. And he was something like 5.5 feet tall, maybe.
That's taller than me. He was more like 4.5 feet tall.
Sorry. So Gary Coleman starts rising, and at first I'm like, "Oh, he's standing on his tippy toes," and then he just keeps going.
They put him on a lift. That was a very funny moment.
Cute. He's a ghost.
He's a ghost. He did, and I thought that was a great way to end this scene. But then we cut to the last scene of Gary Coleman's adventure, which is Aunt Marla's funeral.
Oh my god.
The best line. Can I say it?
Please, I don't remember it.
Al, the other producer, says to Carol during the funeral, "Your aunt was an unusual woman."
The whole scene is perfect, though, because he like sits down behind her and he leans in and he has a dead serious look on his face. And we were surmising, like, maybe the writer meant it to be like a flippant kind of like camaraderie line. Instead, he's just like, "Your aunt was an unusual person."
Nope, unusual woman.
An unusual woman.
And that's it.
That's it.
Nothing only else.
Delivered with like the gravitas of like a Van Helsing.
Also a ridiculous movie.
Yes.
Your aunt was an unusual woman.
What? It should also be established that Aunt Marla and Hal actually had a devious plan to ruin Carol's career?
No, make Carol's career. By slowly seducing her into becoming like a trash Jerry Springer talk show host.
Yeah, because the Tillys get canceled. Mm-hmm. And they meet in the back of a limo, sign a contract, and snicker at each other.
Again, these flashbacks are just showing us how terrible Marla and Hal
are.
Yeah. And I just wanted them to have their own three ghosts in the flashback and then just keep becoming.
I was beginning to worry we were going to get nesting Christmas carols where we would see Marla get visited by the ghosts and then her grandmother also gets visited by ghosts and soon the room is slowly filling up with women and ghosts of Christmas past.
Why didn't we get to know how Marla died?
How'd Marla die? How'd Marla die?
I'm sticking with my theory. Sat on by an elephant.
Okay.
William Shatner.
So we finally are here. We're at William Shatner. The ghost of Christmas Dr. Phil.
Dr. Bob Shatner.
Dr. Bob. So
The opening.
Yeah, the very opening of the movie is Carol watching the Dr. Bob show on TV. Yep. Dr. Bob is played by William Shatner. It is ostensibly a Dr. Phil.
Yeah, he's doling out advice to people, and it's a very therapist-style thing. And he sort of sets the stage in that he's doling out the advice that would be good for somebody who's about to go through three ghosts visiting them. And then when he comes back as the ghost of Christmas present, he only speaks in cliches, and acknowledges that he speaks in cliches, acknowledges that he finds it kind of nauseating himself, but he can't seem to stop.
And he does this every time he speaks.
Yeah.
If he opens his mouth, he speaks in two cliches, then goes, oh, I'm doing it again. Every time. And it was kind of amusing the first time and passable the second, but by the 14th time, it was beyond intolerable.
Yeah, they weren't sure what bit to give him because they kept coming back to that and they made him a germaphobe for a line. And then he reaches out one of his suspenders on his Santa suit and says, here, you have to touch this.
He's wearing suspenders in a Santa suit, yeah.
And it also pulls his pants forward, so it's weirdly creepy and uncomfortable.
It was strange. It was very strange because Tori Spelling grabs the pants and not the suspenders.
But this is their method of transportation.
Oh, yes. Yeah, pants grabbing, teleportation.
The magic traveling pants. Oh, it's like the sisterhood of the traveling pants, but with William Shatner.
So this is the arc where we get to see the miserable, destitute lives of her assistant and her sister.
Her assistant, who lives in Van Nuys.
Yes.
And her sister, who lives in Santa Clarita.
I would say nicer than Van Nuys. It's like a massive, decorated, white suburban house. And they make jokes about oh, there's rats here. And oh, there's a drug deal going on.
Oh, no, I would not want to live in that house.
Really?
There were bars on the windows.
Were there?
Yeah, yes.
Am I thinking of a different one? You're thinking of the second house, which is just a really nice house.
In a really nice neighborhood.
So first we visit Roberta. And we had to pause it at Roberta's house because it opens up with a Christmas tree and a dollhouse.
Oh yes, it was so weird.
And a child takes an ornament off the tiny tree in the dollhouse,
which is actually giant inside the dollhouse,
and brings it over to another small tree, much larger, one that fits on a table, and places the ornament on that tree instead.
It was weird.
It was just one of the most, I don't know what they were trying to say, because it was the most artful.
It was taking the imaginary, wishful ornament from the wished giant tree in the dollhouse to the realistic, sad and pathetic tiny tabletop tree on the dining/living/we-only-have-a-one-room-house. /table.
Poverty. It's about poverty.
Yeah. I think Rachel is on to something here. I think you're right. I think that's what they were trying to go for.
This was the scene where I really realized how toothless this movie was.
Mm. No, that's how to Train Your Dragon.
Shh. As I was saying, this movie refuses to menace in any interesting way.
What do you mean? Like her former lover, who abandoned her before her 10-year-old child was born, shows up serving her papers.
And this is demanding custody.
So, like, in A Christmas Carol, Tiny Tim is dying, and you're like, oh no, Tiny Tim, you need this to survive.
He's got a limp, he's got a cough, it's bad.
In this one, her assistant's daughter is...
Fine. She's just fine.
But, like, her old boyfriend shows up, who's her daughter's father, and he wants to be part of the family, and she's like, no way, you've been gone. He's like, I have my own family now, but we can't have kids, so I've taken yours, and serves her fucking papers on Christmas. Which,
what?
Like, what was his plan here? Because he came initially being like, I want to spend Christmas here. Was he going to be like, great Christmas, everybody, papers. That one's mine.
He comes and he literally says, I want to be a family. And then a few lines later says, I have a wife.
You always go in every situation with a backup.
Oh my God.
Every time I go out for a social engagement, I have two versions of how it's going to play.
Oh yeah?
If things go smoothly, then no one has to be hurt.
Oh, and what's the plan for today if this recording goes poorly?
You get served.
With what?
Frozen yogurt?
Yeah! Nice!
Thank you, Murphy.
So now we see the house of her assistant. No, that was the assistant. The house of her sister. And her sister's family. Her sister's family is...
Perfect.
Is perfect. They're just like, they are just saccharine Stepford perfect. The children are just like, when shall we read A Christmas Carol? It's really just like...
And they deliver their lines like that.
It's like 1950s Stepford weird. And...
There's some creepy tickling.
Yeah. It's super awkward. And they like jump on the couch and look over like the dad's shoulder as he starts to read A Christmas Carol, which is a short novella, but he's holding like a 700-page tome.
And he starts at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now,
they're going to sit through.
I want to get ahead of ourselves and skip to the end where he is reading the same book, but he's reading the end of the book, which is supposed to be the end of The Christmas Carol, except it's a short novella.
What was the
whole middle part?
The Christmas, that's the epic retelling of The Christmas Carol. They expand on a lot of the universe.
Yeah, that's the part where...
That's where you can get the Chris Marills.
Oh, yeah. The Christmas.
Scrooge goes back in time and pulls Jesus off the cross.
What?
And they go fight Satan together in the Garden of Eden.
We really gotta take you to our church, Rachel.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
So I wanna also point out that for some reason they did give Shatner a second gag, which is that he's allergic to grass pollen.
Oh yeah.
This is the third or ninth gag.
Maybe he got a cold in the middle of shooting and they had to explain it somehow.
No, I think they just let him ad-lib and Shatner was just kept adding qualities to his character.
Yeah, he had a stuffy nose through the entire suburban house thing.
Yeah.
The suburban house, which again, he reminds us that like, these are not wealthy people. They live in this small mansion. Barely making ends meet with their two children and their mound of giant toys under their huge tree.
In like, their well-appointed house.
Yeah, and like obviously for the other family, I missed the establishing shot where it doesn't look nice, but like they're always on like these beautiful suburban streets with like decorations in the background, and like the interiors of both houses are like nicely decorated, like clean, like fancy paints, and like
it looks like Sleepy Hollow in Torrance. Like there's a lot of lights. That's not cheap to do.
Yeah,
somebody's gonna have a big electric bill, is all I'm saying.
Does Shatner show her anything else, or is that it?
That's really it. But I do want to share one line that I loved, which is like Carol's looking. They're in the house with her sister's family. And she's like, why are you showing me this? And he's like, because you're depressed.
No. He does. He takes her to the soup kitchen where her old boyfriend's working.
Oh, that's right. That's where he says that.
And he's doing fine. He's doing fine for himself. Nothing happens.
He's serving up things, and he's just like, "Aren't you? You could have been part of this, I guess, but you didn't want
to. You chose to have money,
and
you chose to have a life and a career of your own, foolish woman."
And he serves the people off camera who you don't have to look at.
No.
It's the Hallmark Channel. You shouldn't have to see what actual poor people look like.
Nope.
Dressed like thespians.
Dressed like the entire cast of Phantom of the Opera.
Why do they wear the masks? Because it's cold.
It's cold.
So then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Who is Future? Who is just some limo driver.
Yeah, he's just a quiet limo driver.
We had two big name actors, and now we just have some guy. And he's very tall, very imposing, and does not speak. Nope. But
he drives a stretch Hummer.
Yeah.
A stretch Hummer. This might be the only version of A Christmas Carol I've seen where Ghost of Christmas Future is not just a specter.
Right, he's supposed to be death.
Well, that would be too scary. Think of death. Children might be watching this. And housewives.
No, the children are in bed. It's 9 o'clock when we get to this scene on TV.
Anyway, so, like,
It's supposed to be a specter.
They've already been put to sleep by the time this scene comes on.
He gestures her into his stretch Hummer. And then, like, there's, like, a crazy special effects lightning fills the Hummer, which is why all the other ghosts just teleported by touching and snapping. And, like, he takes her back to the studio and then, like, haunts her on the way in. And she's like, "Oh, get away from me," and gets inside and discovers it's herself in the future, where she's become this, like, trashy Jerry Springer. And she's hosting a show on Christmas Eve where five people tell their families how much they hate them.
And she's like, I don't want to do that.
And we're like, wait, no, that's not how A Christmas Carol works. We're supposed to see how she behaved before. She should want to do it, and she should be horrified by how bad she's become.
And how happy everyone is that you're dead.
Yeah, she should be dead. We should be seeing how dead she is. That's what we should be seeing.
Instead, we see her washed up and opening dead. A retirement home and being told to stand on a corner and flip a sign.
Okay, this was the most inexplicable scene in everything we watched. It's like, okay, where are they going with this? She's not dead. What horrible thing are they doing? Like, they bring her out center stage of a stage in front of, like, five old people in a large, empty audience.
With a sign that says, "Former TV star Carol Cartman."
Yeah. And she, like, cuts a ribbon and then twirls a sign.
But she's elderly.
And that's the scene.
That's it. Like, it's the whole scene.
What?
She's, like, opening a retirement home.
But the sign also says for sale, I think?
For rent?
For rent?
For rent?
I don't know.
I was so confused.
It was very confusing. So
here's, I think, what's the big deal about this scene. It's that, like, what is scarier than being dead?
Being washed up.
Not being famous anymore. Oh, horrors, right? Like, can you imagine? Really terrifying.
Yeah, this movie does do stakes.
And that's, again, like, that's like the movie has no stakes.
And then she dies. We don't know why.
Once again, we chanted, "How'd she die?"
Yeah.
"How'd she die?"
And we didn't know.
We don't know.
And the only people to attend her funeral were Roberta and the other guy.
Jimmy the producer, who is Roberta's love
interest.
Jimmy
the showrunner, basically.
Who have neither aged, but apparently broke up, because I guess...
Yeah, they were together before, and here it's like they haven't seen each other in a long time, so I guess they broke up.
It was very confusing.
They had mildly aged. Her hair was messy.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Yeah,
he looked the same.
Yeah, they put a little gray in his hair.
So that's when Christmas Future shoves Carol into the casket. And she says, no, I'll change. And then he shuts the casket. She wakes up and she goes like, ugh. I'm a better person now.
This is where it gets back on track with being a Christmas Carol.
Yes.
It got pretty far off the rails.
Except that it seems more like she had a stroke than she was contrite. Like, what did she have to be... I mean, she had a few things to be contrite about, but it was just weird.
Different strokes.
Thank you for that Gary Coleman comment.
Thank you. So her first interaction is with Roberta, right?
No, Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy wakes her up.
And she's Merry Christmas. And he's like, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to get to the part with Roberta because she is, you know, she's now going through that, you know, she's generous now. She, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting who she talked to. Who does she give her wallet to?
Roberta.
It was Roberta. Because she's like, oh, you know what, you're gonna need more money to buy presents. You're gonna need this. My house,
for rental.
You are gonna move into it with your family with no rent. You're not gonna pay rent. Oh, and then she just hands her wallet over. And then she says, also, in my wallet is the card for my lawyer. In case you need a lawyer for something.
Tonight.
Like, tonight.
What? Like, oh my god, you're tripling my salary and you're suing me? What's happening right now?
It's like, here's a bunch of money and the number for a lawyer in case you need one.
Tonight.
Carol, what's happening tonight?
It's clearly a threat. But what?
God, she's just talking about Santa Claus. He always breaks and enters. So, thank you was Roberta's big reward at first because she gives her a big... Carol does the Bob Cratchit thing where she's like, Cratchit, get in here. Why didn't you show up to work? Blah, blah, blah. But, oh, it's just a joke. I'm nice now. Here you go. Here's the biggest
boost. She sort of does that to everybody.
Yes.
And then she refuses to do the fat Santa thing. We don't need to go low.
Oh, she goes full Oprah.
She goes full Oprah, returns the gifts to the foster children.
And buys more.
And declares that she's taking everyone on the crew on a Hawaiian vacation.
Yeah, all the crew and all of their families.
Just how much money does she have?
Clearly a lot.
Like, that's outrageously wealthy.
I mean, think how many cars Jay Leno has.
But here's the thing. If she already has that much money, that means she already has a show that's successful. Mm-hmm. And if her show is that successful, why is her producer like, let's get her into Freaks?
Yeah.
For money.
None of it makes any sense.
I feel like this is a trope of Hallmark and Lifetime movies, is that they just, the economy is in no way anything like reality in there.
I did feel that this was an aggressively pro-capitalist movie.
Oh my god, it was so capitalist.
Go buy things. Oh, there are homeless people. Rather than, you know, actually help them the year round, why don't we just feed them on Christmas?
Is that not what A Christmas Carol is about? No, the answer is no, everybody.
Oh, okay.
Good.
You were thinking that was a real question.
So let's see. She runs into the stagehand again and is like, get those presents back out there. No, I'm not firing you. And hugs him. And he gives the best performance in the movie. I'll be like, whoop.
Yeah.
And that's not sarcasm. He's genuinely he made that bit work.
Yeah, he was literally confused. So then she does her show and decides that she makes all these weird promises that she really should have gone over with a lawyer first.
Oh, right. She
during the live taping of the show, like, she's gonna do product placements.
That was the most capitalist thing.
All the time, and that she's gonna give all that money to all the homeless shelters that her ex-boyfriend runs. And then later on, she shows up. She goes to her sister's house for Christmas with more gifts, fesses up to the kids that the gifts they got before were bought by her assistant, not
totally
her.
Totally unnecessary.
Yeah. Like, what are they? They don't care. And then her ex-boyfriend, John, shows up on Christmas Eve at the sister's house to
He doesn't what? Call. And
he doesn't
like,
call
is she
there? Like, hey, is she there? Or hey, do you know how to find your sister? Or hey, it's Christmas Eve and it's a family time. Maybe I shouldn't encroach on your family because well, I clearly have nothing else to do with my life.
He was called out on live TV.
Well, he was Carol. Thanked sort of on live TV. So my question about that, like he shows up and Carol and he are making moon eyes at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long had they been broken up and why hasn't he moved on?
Well, they're soulmates.
Why hasn't she moved on?
She's been busy with her career. Get with the program. That's all the movie is about.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Anyway, it ends on them all singing together and reading A Christmas Carol.
They sing Joy to the World.
So after an awkward big mouth kiss.
Oh, it was weird. God. That was a lot of tongue for Hallmark.
And they do this while the three ghosts...
Return of the Jedi outside.
Yes, they do. They're like slightly opaque.
And they give us kind of the moral of the story, which is like Shatner's like, I'm happy. All you need to do is give him a good scare to set him safe. Just frighten them with the fear of God. I mean, Santa. And they'll get right back on track and become the Stepford person you always wanted them to be.
It's a weird movie.
And then they all sing. And it's uncomfortable.
So there was a 1995 Lifetime movie that I feel like kickstarted the whole Lifetime and Hallmark movie craze called Ebby.
Right.
That was about a modern female version of Scrooge that I feel like this was desperately trying to be. And my God, did it miss the mark.
Can you give us any details about Ebby?
None. I remember thinking it was charming when it came out. Factor in, though, I was probably in fourth
10?
Grade.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Again, A Christmas Carol has all the beats you need. There's a reason it has been adapted 8 million times, is because all the pieces are there. You get to make some creative choices in there. Mm-hmm. It's hard to mess it up. How did A Carol Christmas mess it up?
Yeah, like if you... It,
by
if
not you, having Carol be the evil one?
Yeah.
That's a big one.
If you think of A Christmas Carol as the page of a coloring book, the lines are right there. You can just create beautiful colors in it, but they just like scribbled all over the place.
They colored the next page?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not say that this is the worst show on earth.
Agreed.
Agreed. Because I didn't fall asleep like I did during Cop Rock.
Cop Rock.
No, the Desmond per, what is it?
Desmond Pfeiffer.
That kept us awake and...
And horrified.
And horrified. Yeah.
And I keep blocking it out, so clearly that's gotta be the worst show on earth. It just wasn't good. It was inconsistent and confusing and... I think the only thing keeping it together was that it was edited that way.
So I kind of feel like this is a little bit like Lidsville in that we're not the target audience and we're not capable of putting ourselves in the mindset of the target audience. It's simply too far from our own. That said, as a film, it was atrocious. It is bad. In that it cannot even follow the archetype of A Christmas Carol, makes no sense, has a shockingly inactive protagonist, awful acting, and it's just, it feels like it's a Lego building. No, not a Lego building. Legos are kind of sturdy. Like, it's like a house of cards. Yeah, okay. Like, all the set pieces are just shaky. Mm. All the logic of the movie is shaky. All people are, like, shopping on Christmas Eve. It just feels... Like, zero thought went into it.
I found this to be utterly charmless.
Yeah, there was no...
Yeah. It had no charm.
And like, Christmas movies and stuff are supposed to make you feel a little fuzzy inside.
Yeah, I wrote, this was not at all compelling.
I think a better question, then, is it the worst show on earth is it bad for a Hallmark movie?
Yeah.
It's the only Hallmark movie I've ever seen. And it's terrible. I would say it's the worst Christmas special I've seen so okay. far.
Yeah, as Christmas movies go, I would not watch this one again.
I've watched a handful of Hallmark and Lifetime movies, just like being at home with relatives who like watching that stuff. This one looks like it was made at such a lower budget than anything else they've produced that it just like, it looks like it's from a completely different studio. It looks mm-hmm. like it's from like a college TV station.
Yeah. Looks like it was shot on video.
Yeah.
It likely was.
Mm. In 2003, they were just probably, I think, making the HDTV switch. I can't remember exactly when that happened. But
I got nothing.
Well, it's time to turn in for a long winter's nap. But if you enjoyed our particular brand of holiday jeers, you'll enjoy the antics of the Scabby Rooster Twitch channel. There, Alex, Tachi, Carrie, and myself are on The Demi Dozen, an RPG actual play of Scion, 2nd edition. We play the chosen and children of the gods of old in modern times. Check it out at twitch.tv/scabbyrooster. Rachel, you want plug?
No, me no want plug.
Carrie, you want plug anything?
I think you just did, but thank you.
Beautiful.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Carrie Kingdom, CarryKingdom. And thanks for having me on. This was super fun.
Thanks for coming, Carrie.
You are our first guest who has a social media presence.
Yay! And you had fun.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please do leave us a rating on your podcast platform of choice and subscribe so that we can continue to deliver this fine audio content to your ear holes. And if you want to reach out and say hello, we'd love to hear from you at our new email address, worstshowonearth@gmail.com. That's worstshowonearth@gmail.com. Until next time, enjoy what you watch, no matter how crappy it is. Or turn it off.